Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns have their bye this week, but that doesn't mean things have been boring. The fallout and questions from the 28-3 loss to the Ravens continue. Why didn't Deshaun Watson play? Why was Dorian Thompson-Robinson so bad? Why was Joshua Dobbs traded? Here to explore the mess, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. Hey, Chud.
That was one of your best intros ever. I mean, I'm locked in. I'm locked in. I want to listen. I want to, you know. Well, I'll tell you, you know, we always talk about it, that the bye week, man. You really want to win before the bye because it's such a sour taste when you lose and you got to think about it and talk about it for that extra week. Needless to say, you know, with the Watson injury, you know, maybe this early bye comes at a good time. We probably didn't like this bye earlier, and I know we didn't because we talked about it, but maybe, Scott, the bye comes at a good time for him.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Andrew Berry, the GM, said as much Wednesday when we were out there talking to him in Berea that nobody likes the early one because when they come back, they're going to have to play 13 straight games, and that doesn't include the potential playoffs, right? So it's early bye is not good, except the Browns have a lot of stuff they're dealing with. It starts with their quarterback having a bruised right shoulder that kept him out of the Ravens game. You know, the team is optimistic that he's going to play coming out of the bye against the 49ers. If they didn't have a bye, that's what we'd be talking about all week. Is he going to play, right? Why didn't he play? All those things. I think they're still organizationally getting past the Nick Chubb injury. They haven't run the ball well the last two games. Part of that's the defenses they played. There's other factors. But they have to get that run game figured out, and that's part of – I think that might be job one of the bye week is to figure out what they're doing in the run game from mostly a scheme perspective. You know, there's other injuries that they've had. Ethan Posick, the center, left the stadium Sunday on crutches. Kevin Stefanski called him day-to-day, so the hope is he'll be ready to go against the Niners. Miles Garrett's got a little bit of a foot, so the extra week's going to help him. So I do think it comes at a good time. You know, now 8 weeks from now, you're probably going, hey, it'd be another good time for a bye. But given everything that happened, specifically Sunday against the Ravens, it is a good time for a bye. Except, do you have another week to dwell on how poorly things went against the Ravens?
Wow, yeah, no question. But I think we do that more than they do that. I mean, yeah. I think they have to put it behind them. You know, fans and media, you know, that's on us because we have to sit here and wait longer. You know, I the players, they're, you know, they're excited about having days off and they're gonna put it behind them and come back. So I'm not really too worried about that. But how do you feel about the record? I mean, I wanted it to be 3-1. We, you know, we're hoping it would be 3-1. But at the end of the day, you know, minus the fact I don't like that they're 1-2 in the division because you gotta be better in the division if you're gonna get over this hump. I mean, you cannot lose games in the division like they continue to do. They're 1-2 now. So other than that, that's disappointing to me. But I'll take 2-2 in the fact of, and it doesn't feel like it did last year. I mean, just remember how deflated we were after that Jets game last year. I just feel like we're in a better place this year than we were last year.
Yeah, I agree with all that, Sean. I think there's reasons for that. I'm with you. 1-2, when you talked about getting to the bye, 3-1 and 2-1, kind of seem like achievable goals. And they fell short, 2-2, 1-2. Now, a big part of that is that their quarterback didn't play in the last game, right? And I don't think they had any chance to win without Watson. And we're going to get into this. Maybe they should have had a better chance, but I don't think they did. And to me, I think that helps from a psychological standpoint is I think you should be able to wipe that Ravens game away. Your quarterback doesn't play. If most teams in this league, if your starter quarterback doesn't play and you go to a rookie, and we can talk about whether you should have gone to a rookie, you're going to lose, right? So, like, if Patrick Mahomes doesn't play and the Chiefs lose, nobody says the Chiefs are done because Patrick Mahomes comes back and they're back to being the Chiefs. Now, obviously, Deshaun Watson is not on the same level as Patrick Mahomes, but I think
the Browns aren't on the level as the Chiefs.
Correct. But I do think that comparison is somewhat valid. You lose your starting quarterback.
I get it.
Right? Like your offense plays terribly. Well, that should change when your starting quarterback comes back. And he's coming off the best game he's had since he's been with your team. So I think psychologically, it's a loss that they should be able to get over, assuming Deshaun Watson comes back and assuming he plays at a high level. And I think the other thing is, you know, I just looked at this thing. We get all these gambling or emails from gambling sites. Their over-under win total before the season was 9.5. It's still 9.5. So nothing from the outside has changed about the overall perception of this team. And I think that's important to note. I think the defense is still good, even though it had its hiccups against the Ravens. Like, I think the reasons to think that the Browns are going to win some games, it's just hard to always keep that in perspective when they get blown out 28-3.
Yeah, and it goes back to what we said last week. I said it, you agreed with me, and it was, you can overcome losing Nick Chubb. You hate it. You don't want to lose him. We love him. He's one of the best in the business, and it sucks, but you could possibly overcome that. I think we saw last Sunday, you lose Watson, we're done.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think most of that is true, or I think that's true for a high percentage of teams in the league.
Yes,
especially
the
right,
NFL, right?
Right. Yeah. Especially the higher level you get of your quarterback, right? Like, if you're Atlanta and you lose Desmond Ridder, the drop-off probably isn't that great. But if you're theoretically the Browns, if you're the Bengals, I mean, Joe Burrow's playing on a bad calf because they don't want to drop off to his backup, right? I think it's Jake Browning. So, like, that just happens in this league. So, yeah, you know, I think that's, you know, I think that's one of the takeaways. But you're right. Like, the Browns think they can figure out the run game. And we'll talk about that too, right? Jonathan Taylor, do they need to get him? Like, they think they can figure out the run game. And that's how the NFL works. You can figure that out. You can't figure out how to make up for not having quality quarterback play. Like, it's just, it's almost nearly impossible no matter how good your defense is.
So let's talk about the whole Deshaun Watson situation. And basically, Scott, we're taping this on Friday, which is, you know, we didn't come on with an immediate reaction. You know, we got to hear what Andrew Berry had to say. We got to hear what Stefanski had to say. We've had some time to really soak it all in. So I'm basically going to set you up now. Everyone knows what's happened by now. We're not delivering breaking news. We know he didn't play. We know it was, what, 10:30 in the morning when we found out. What I want you to do is basically take us through. I want to know, were you surprised he didn't play? Did you think he was going to play? And then your reaction to everything that happened afterward, from what Stefanski said about him not playing to what Andrew Berry said. I just want you to kind of sum it all up for everyone.
Yeah, I was surprised that he didn't play, Chud. And there's reasons for that. Everybody around the team expected him to play, right? And that started as early as Wednesday when he did not practice, right? He didn't throw. Yeah, we still expect him to play. That's the message from the team. Same thing Thursday when he threw a little bit, but nothing significant. Friday, I saw him throw two passes and shut it down. Kevin Stefanski, did he throw? Yeah, he did a little light throwing besides that. Has the thought changed? No. Kevin Stefanski, we're hopeful. Deshaun Watson in the locker room says, I'm okay, I expect to play. And he's talking to Mary Kay. He didn't want to do a whole thing. Mary Kay Cabot from Cleveland.com. But, like, she's kind of talking as, like, the representative of the group. He's like, yeah, I don't want to do a big thing, but he's, you know, he says he's okay, says he expects to play. I see him do, like, the windmill with his arm to show that he's got range of motion. You know, Myles Garrett said he expected him to play. Like, that was just the feeling. And behind that feeling is that, first of all, he's played through significant injuries throughout his career. Played on an ACL in college for a game. Took a bus from Houston to Jacksonville so he could play despite a punctured lung and cracked ribs. And he played because he wasn't cleared to fly, but he played anyway. I took a bus and played. So you have that as a backdrop. It's quote unquote only a bruise. It's not a separated shoulder. It's not a torn labrum. So a bruise, you know, we've all had bruises. Now, some are worse than others. How it affects you obviously can be different. So that's part of it. And just the idea that he could play, and then the fact that he had another 48 hours, right? This is Friday afternoon. They're not playing till Sunday. His arm had gotten better throughout the week. So all that led to the expectation from me, from his teammates, from the organization, from Watson, that he was going to play. Then you get to the game Sunday morning. He throws about five passes, about 7 yards, nothing with any zip. Talks to the head trainer, Joe Sheehan, head athletic trainer. Throws another five passes, another conversation. Throws one, I think it was one more. And then walks to Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, says, I can't do it. Gets a pat on the shoulder. They leave. It's DTR time. So the expectation was he was going to go out there at 10 o'clock in the morning and be able to let loose, which he didn't do at all last week. And that's what the change was going to be. That, yeah, he went from throwing soft passes to, okay, eventually that will feel good enough that he can let it rip. And according to everybody I've talked to, he never got to a point where the soft tossing allowed him to make those hard throws. Now, my only kind of pushback is, why didn't he try to rip one? You know, like it seems to me like, okay, throw one as hard as you can for 20 yards, and if your arm's okay, you know, like if you can get past that, maybe you can play. And the Browns just say he was never able to get to that point because whatever was going on in his shoulder, discomfort, pain, inability to just emotionally move it like he needed to, he couldn't do that at 50%. So there's no way he was going to be able to do that 100%. Therefore, he couldn't play because you need to be able to throw to be the quarterback. So that's how it went down. You ask about how the Browns handled it. You know, like I thought Kevin Stefanski was just being honest on Monday when he said, yes, he was cleared. Yes, it was Deshaun Watson's decision. But we knew that, right? Like if you watch it play out, he walked to Stefanski and Berry and said, I can't play. Like, if they ruled him out, that's a team decision, right? But he had been ruled out. He was questionable. It was up to him to see how he could handle whatever was going on in his shoulder. So, like, I don't think that was an indictment on Watson. I just think that's how it was. The medical team says it's structurally sound. You're not going to do yourself any damage if you can play, but it's up to you if you can play. And he said he couldn't play. So, yeah, I think that puts some of the responsibility on Watson, but I think that's the reality. I don't think it came across probably how Stefanski wanted it. There's plenty of, oh, my gosh, he kind of took himself out of the game, and I get that reaction, but I think that's just the reality of the situation. And I do think Andrew Berry, when he talked Wednesday, made it sound better by saying, I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but it was like, we decided he couldn't play, right? It was more of a team and Watson collaborative thing. And just by saying us instead of him, you know, I feel like that phrasing is probably better, right?
Was that damage control? That damage control? Because in the media, Stefanski took a little bit of flack, right, with the fans.
Yeah, I think it is, and I got the quote in front of me now. It became a very decision for us not to put him out there. And I do think that was a conscious decision to rephrase how Stefanski had phrased it. And, you know, maybe we're just picking hairs here, right? Whatever that phrase is that I'm butchering. Splitting hairs, you know, right? I think that's the right message is, hey, we knew he couldn't throw. He knew he couldn't throw. We decided he couldn't play. But there is some truth to the fact that if Watson said, hey, I'm going to give it a go, they would have let him give it a go. So, you know, I think both things are kind of true.
So is this smart by Watson? Because, you know, hey, he doesn't do further damage. He doesn't think he could help the team and he'll be ready now against San Francisco. Or does this hurt himself in the locker room a little bit? Does this show people like, maybe he's not tough, or you know how like players are always like, oh man, he was there for us. He gutted it out. Like, we couldn't have done it without him. Like, you know, what do you think? Do you think this was a smart move by Watson, or do you think this hurts him?
That's a great question. I don't think it has a long-term negative effect on him because he's a starting quarterback. Team's kind of got no choice but to follow him. He couldn't throw, right? Like, I think that is the reality. If I saw him throwing the ball 30 yards down the field and then he didn't play, then I think you have bigger questions. But the players were at practice and he didn't throw, right? Like, so it's not like they saw him all of a sudden shut it down and protect himself. Like, they can, that can be in the back of your mind, but there's no evidence of that because he just wasn't able to throw all week. So I don't think it has a long-term impact on how they feel about him. I think his history of playing through injuries, and the only NFL games he's missed with injury was when he tore his ACL as a rookie. So he's been durable. He's shown up outside of the whole contract dispute, off the field stuff, you know, how it ended in Houston. But physically, he's played through things. So I think he's got some collateral there with his teammates that they're not, you know, they didn't enter it doubting his toughness. So I think that helps.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't think it's a long-term thing, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on.
So what about the game plan? A lot of fans unhappy with the play calling, which every time we lose, they are. That, right. So that's not saying much. But bottom line is, did you feel like Stefanski had a good game plan? And I guess what I wonder is, was there a Watson game plan and a DTR game plan? Was there just a Watson game plan, and then once he was out, you put someone else in to try to do the Watson game plan? Just take us through that.
Yeah, I think that they expected Watson to play. So therefore, the main plan was a Deshaun Watson game plan. I also know that Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who we can call DTR because it saves time, took almost all of the first team reps during the practice week. So he was familiar with that game plan. I also know Kevin Stefanski and his coaching staff are smart enough to know that if your quarterback doesn't throw all week, or doesn't really throw all week, and he's listed as questionable, you list him as questionable, there's a chance he's not going to play, right? So this wasn't like an injury happened on Saturday and then you're scrambling. They had some lead-up time here to come up with two plans. A Watson plan, which is your normal game plan, and a tweaked DTR plan. And I believe that that's how it was. That it's not like all of a sudden at 10:30 on Sunday, like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? I think they had a tweak to the plan. Now, I'll also say this, like, it's not going to be a completely different game plan, right? Like, you run the same plays. You're not going to run it. And the biggest argument is, well, you should have run the ball more. Well, they didn't run it well. Like, as a team, they did not run it well. So, therefore, you can't just run it 100 times, or that's a hyperbole. You can't run it 45 times if you're gaining 2 yards a carry. Like, that's not a sustainable thing. Now, you can say, okay, you run it three times and punt and then hope your defense bails you out, and maybe that's a way to play. It's hard to do when you're playing Lamar Jackson. It's hard to keep your defense on the field after, you know, put them back on the field every three plays. You got to be able to throw the ball. And Andrew Berry said as much Wednesday. You have a quarterback. His job is to throw the ball. Now, you know, could there have been a couple of less trick plays, right? I know that that's an argument out there. Yeah, that's fine. You can make that argument. But I think, the bottom line is, your quarterback, DTR, did not play anywhere close to good enough for you to win that game. So, therefore, it didn't matter what the game plan was. If your quarterback turns the ball over, throws about six passes that should have been intercepted, and winds up throwing three picks, it's none of that other stuff is going to matter. So, I do not blame Kevin Stefanski for that.
Do you blame the Browns for not having a veteran quarterback and throwing a rookie into the fire like 90% of Cleveland does?
Well, to me, I think that's a more legitimate argument. I do, and I want to get in it. So they have Josh Dobbs, right? They have him all off. Well, they bring him back in March, right? Because he was with the team last year. I think it was March. They bring him back in the offseason. He's the number two, right? Like, that's the plan. He's going to be the number two. They draft DTR to be the number three this year and take over as a number two, hopefully, in 2024. That's the plan. DTR plays great in the preseason, impresses all the coaches during the offseason program. He's started 48 games at UCLA, so he's got a lot of experience. Dobbs has started two games in the NFL, both at the end of last year with Tennessee. Was fine, but not great. Doesn't light it up in the preseason. Doesn't play much. But he's still going to be your number two. And then Arizona comes out of nowhere. They got quarterback issues. Kyler Murray's, you know, starts the season on pop. Colt McCoy, they don't like how he's playing. and they offer the Browns to move up from the seventh round to the fifth round for Joshua Dobbs. And the Browns decide that that's the right move. Now, when it happened, I think we probably talked about it on here, Chud. The question, it's risky because you're saying we trust a rookie quarterback to be the backup. And he could be charged to finish games, to start games, to win games. And all you're getting is a bump from seventh round to fifth round. Like, is it worth it? And, you know, there's a little bit of money involved that, you know, I think Dobbs is probably making $1 million or $2 million. So maybe they save some money there. I'm sure that was part of the discussion. I don't think it was a deciding factor at all. To me, it came down to, I think the Browns thought DTR was as good as Joshua Dobbs and gave them as good a chance to win. So that's why they made that move. Now, in hindsight, right, we're a month and a half later, we see DTR overmatched, not ready to play. In the meantime, you have Joshua Dobbs, who has started all four games in Arizona and has played at a pretty high level. Arizona's 1-3, and people thought they weren't going to win any games. And I think his quarterback rating, his passer rating, is close to 100. Hasn't thrown an interception yet. Has thrown, I think, four touchdowns. So when you have that as a backdrop, obviously you should not have traded Joshua Dobbs. He would have given you a better chance to win against the Ravens. So that's a legitimate argument. Yes, your GM should have known that, right? That's what he gets paid to do, is to decide if this guy's going to have a better chance, give us a better chance to win. So I do think that was an error, but I will say at the time, I thought DTR might have been just as good as Joshua Dobbs, because I had not seen Dobbs play at any level close to what he's played with in his first four starts with Arizona.
But Barry defended it, though, the other day, right? I mean, he's still happy with what he did. I mean, do you buy that? I mean, even after what he saw this past Sunday?
Yeah, that's a great follow-up. I don't, you know, he probably can't, what else can he say, right? He probably can't throw himself on a sword. If Watson can't play this week or gets hurt again, you got to go to DTR, so you can't be killing the kid. So I probably don't believe him. You know, I think in an honest moment, he would say that, you know, that he would say that he would not have made that trade. You know, he did say that it's part of the whole short-term, long-term, right? You keep one foot in the present, one in the future. That, you know, so you want your, you know, I don't know, part of that's getting your young guy experience as a number two. I think part of that is you improve your draft stock. But it's weird because the Browns don't value those late-round draft picks that much. Right? Like, they know the percentage of hits in the fifth round and later is really bad. So that's why it seems a little, I don't know, hypocritical, a little confusing that you'd make that move just to move up in the draft, right? Like, because I don't think they care that much about fifth round picks, although it allows them to move around the draft, allows them to make trades. So they do feel like there's some value in those draft picks. But I think if he had to do it over again, just based on Sunday, he would not have done that. And, you know, now the other part of that is you also have P.J. Walker, who has started, I think, seven games with the Panthers, and he's on the practice squad. Like, could he be the backup? And now that's not their plan, and that's not, you know, they drafted DTR. They saw what they saw at a DTR in the preseason. But he looked so bad that – I think you're questioning everything, including whether or not P.J. Walker should be the backup.
Yeah, you may have hit on this, but now you can have three quarterbacks on your roster, right, because of that rule from last year in the playoff game?
Yeah, but in order to do that, they all have to be on the 53-man roster. So,
okay. All right.
Yeah, so that makes a difference.
All right, well, so DTR – how would it, if they would have kept Dobbs, how would have you opened up the season? Would have you had all three on the 53-man roster? Because you could have lost DTR, right?
Exactly. So yeah. It did. So you're right. That's a great point, Chud. It did. The trade of Dobbs freed up a roster spot. There's no doubt about that. And that factored into their decision. That is a great point to make.
Yeah. So, you know, it frees up a roster spot, but then you wonder, was that roster spot worth it to maybe keep all three guys. I don't know. I mean, right. just to be safe.
Yeah, no,
because it was because you know.
Yeah, no, that's a great point that I have not given enough thought to. That really factored in that decision. Now, you could take a step back and go big picture and say, okay, did that fifth safety you kept, which realistically is probably could be that spot, right? Because they kept five safeties. I thought they'd keep four. Is that fifth safety more important than a veteran backup quarterback? And, right, yeah. The ability to keep all three. And I think the easy answer is no. But that did factor in their decision because we know how it goes on cut down day. Like, every spot's important. You're trying to, you know, maneuver the roster. They do all kinds of gymnastics. So, yeah, that's an important part.
I just think they should have found a way to have all three guys, especially like if it was a second or third round pick, but for a fifth round pick to give up an experienced guy. Now, do I think Dobbs is going to lead you to the Super Bowl? I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is he's going to give you a chance to win a game, because that's what a good backup quarterback should do, is be able to win you a game here or there if needed during the season. So if Watson goes down for the whole season, I don't know if Dobbs would carry you. That's not my argument here.
Right.
I just feel like if you feel like you have a team, and they do because they put so much money into it, and they feel like they can compete to go to the playoffs and win a Super Bowl, I just have a hard time as a fan and a member in the media being able to accept anything they say that forces a rookie out against the Baltimore Ravens just like that happened. I think that was just, you know, I'm not going to kill him over the Watson injury and, you know, whether he should have played or shouldn't have. I'm siding with you on all that. And I think we both agree on this too. I think this was turned out to be, at least for now, a bad trade. Hey, maybe that fifth round pick turns into something special, or, you know, Watson comes back and they ended up going to the playoffs anyway, and this loss doesn't matter, if that makes sense. All of that will play out. But at this moment, it doesn't look good.
I think you hit a bunch of nails on the head there, Chud. I think you're right. The only is I try to think how the Browns thought. I think they undervalued Dobbs. I think, and I'm sure they overvalued DTR at the same time. And that was based on preseason, and that can be fool's gold, watching what a guy does in the preseason. But I don't think they expected Dobbs to play as well as he has with the Cardinals. And if he hadn't, let's say he goes to the Cardinals in the backup and doesn't play, this is a harder discussion because you go, oh, well, we don't know what Joshua Dobbs could do. But now we know what Dobbs could do, so it's an apples-to-apples comparison. And it makes them look bad. So I just think that I don't think they expected Dobbs to play as well as he has.
Yeah, boy, it's the bottom line though is we're pretty sure Watson is going to play against San Francisco, right?
Yeah, it would be. I mean, we were surprised he didn't play last week, but yeah, they expect him to play. They think the 2 weeks is going to help. He's supposed to rest and rehab the shoulder this week. You know, we're back out there Monday. I think it would calm a lot of things if he's on the field Monday and throwing somewhat normally, right? If not, and this continues to linger, then it's going to be a tense week out there, especially with a big-time 49ers team coming to town.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And one thing to wrap it up, too, I'm not saying they should have gotten rid of DTR over Dobbs. I wish they could have kept all three of them somehow because, yeah. I mean, obviously they feel high – they think highly of DTR and, you know, he looked good in the preseason and this could be a guy that down the road, you know, and I'm sure here's one thing to think about. He gained a lot of experience in that last game, boy. He baptism by fire, right?
Yeah, it will be interesting to see the next time if he plays.
Yeah.
What kind of progress he makes, right? Because there is a leap from first game to second game. He's a smart kid. He works hard. Like, there's a lot of reasons to believe that he can be a backup quarterback, a successful backup quarterback. But no part of how he looked against the Ravens would make you think that way. He looked that bad, right? So I'd be curious to see what kind of jump he would make in his second action.
Let's break down the defense really quickly. I think at this point it's Friday. We don't need to completely break down the game. But we know that the Ravens' running game looked pretty good. We know the Browns have been great against tight ends all year. And then Mark Andrews just destroys them, which I don't think we're shocked by Mark Andrews destroying anyone, but maybe just the fact that the Browns have been so good against tight ends. That said, I want to know what camp you kind of fall in. I've had some discussions with people this week about the defense, and a couple of good points have been made in my discussions and things I've analyzed. And, you know, one person told me, well, man, they just got gassed. I mean, they were out there so much that you can't blame them with the turnovers and the way DTR played. You know, another thought is, hey, you're not going to hold every NFL offense to 3, 7, or 10 points, right? So we can't get greedy. But then another point is, and this is one that I have as well, is the fact that if you're an elite defense and we're calling them, and some people are calling them a championship defense, certainly didn't look like it last Sunday. So I kind of want you to break that all down, everything I just said.
Yeah. I start with Lamar Jackson's going to make plays. That's what he does. So I think it's naive to think you're going to go in a game against the Ravens in a healthy Lamar Jackson and shut him out or hold him to 3 points. That's really difficult to do because he's that dynamic. I thought the offense put the defense in some bad spots. Obviously, the first touchdown is a 10-yarder. And just say, like, let's say DTR doesn't throw that pick. And it's a terrible pick. It's a bad decision. He throws into double coverage. And it's an easy play call. Like, it's a slant. The guy's got to be able to make it, throw a 5-yard slant. Now, he shouldn't have thrown that because it was double coverage. But it's not like that's a difficult play. That's an easy play call for Stefanski. I don't blame Stefanski at all. I blame DTR for trying to throw it there. And he threw it about 3 yards behind Cooper. Turns into a pick, turns into a 52-yard return, 10-yard touchdown. So, like, that's not the defense's fault. Yeah, you'd like him not to give up a touchdown on the first play. Terrible spot. But then, to me, what's alarming, and then in the fourth quarter, there's another pick, a 36-yarder. You know, the game's getting out of hand there. Okay. So, to me, it comes down to the second quarter where the defense gives up 14 points. When the game's still close, it's 7-3, they give him 14 points on touchdown drives of 93 and 74 yards. And those are the first two sustained touchdown drives the Browns defense has given up all year. Because the only other touchdown it had given up was the 71-yard slant catch and run by Pittsburgh's George Pickens on Monday night, right? So, but this was sustained. The Ravens put play after play together. They go 93 and 74. And that's troubling. Your defense should be able to get off the field. Now, there was missed tackling was an issue. They gave up plays in, like, second and long. They let them convert one, I think, with a penalty. There's a third and long where Lamar Jackson had all day and Zay Flowers runs from left to right all the way across the field for a long completion, beating Martin Emerson Jr., which it's really hard to cover a guy that long. So there were breakdowns at key moments. And the Browns have been so good getting off the field on third down. And they struggled on those two drives specifically. Like at the end of the game, the stats were not bad. They didn't give up a ton. You know, I think they gave up 16 first downs, which they'd entered the game giving up 21 total. So that's a big change. But, you know, I think the Browns had 11 first downs. I'm looking it up right now. It was 16-13, right? So, like, it's not like the Browns had a huge disadvantage in first downs. The Ravens are 4-12 on third down, which isn't great, but, you know, the conversions came on those touchdown drives. So there were issues there, and I don't think they were exposed, but I think you saw if a team commits to a power running game and you don't tackle great and you're worried about the quarterback running, which you always are with Lamar Jackson, then you're a little bit vulnerable, and that's going to happen. So I think – the defense didn't play as well as it has, didn't play as well as it could. I think if they played Lamar Jackson again, I think they'd probably be – or the Ravens again. I think they'd probably be better. And they got no help at all from the offense. We're put in bad situations. We're asked to be on the field a lot, and Wyatt Teller brought that up. He said, hey, any defense is out there a ton is going to get – he didn't use the word exposed, but, you know, they're going to have a really difficult time. So – that 93-yarder, I put it all on the Browns defense. The 74-yarder, I think you could argue that They were out there a lot by the end of the second quarter, and maybe that affected them. But they still could have gotten off the field. They still had some chances. And Greg Newsome missed a tackle on Mark Andrews, which turned into a bigger play. They didn't get the pass rush on a key play. And then, really, you know, I think Mark Andrews was 5 catches for 80, and he had the 2 touchdowns. The one was a great throw by Lamar Jackson, like a perfect throw. Denzel Ward thinks he's going to drop back off his guy and either intercept it or get a hand on it. It's a perfect throw. So, you know, I think part of it is, hey, you give Lamar Jackson his props for making some big plays. He threw 2 touchdowns, rushed for 2 touchdowns, and the defense didn't play as well as it has. And there's room to grow off that.
And you said last week you weren't going to completely shut this guy down. He was going to make plays.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's the ebb and flows of the National Football League is you're not going to play great defense every week unless you're the 85 Bears. And part of that is that, you know, we've been thinking that these guys might be the 85 Bears, right? They're off to such a good start. But, and Anthony Walker said, you know, you have to be humbled in this league. The league humbles you. And I think there was part of that, hey, man, we're so good. And I think this was a little reality check. And I think it'll have a positive effect moving forward. I think the defense is going to come out of the bye back to what it was the first 3 games.
I think the best thing that came out of Sunday was the gesture by you. Just, you're not a selfish guy. It's very nice of you to loan Njoku your mask.
Oh, my God. I feel so bad for him. You know, he's going to be fine. He played. But, gosh, seeing him show up in that Halloween mask, I don't know if that was him trying to be funny or him just not wanting to show his face. I think that was it. He's a good-looking dude. He's not that I know him super well, but he's got a vanity about him, right? Like, he walks around without a shirt, like, right? Every picture he takes is without a shirt on. And, he didn't want to talk after the game about it because I think he's really self-conscious about the burns on his face. And he gets all kinds of praise for his toughness, and, you know, I think he deserves those. Anthony Walker said he wouldn't have been able to play. Talk about a weird situation, but also a scary one, Judd. I mean, you know, I always think twice when I light my grill. You know, like, when you're on fire, when you're on propane, I know guys who've had really bad accidents with that, and it can be difficult. So I just hope, you know, I hope David gets back to being, you know, like, everything heals like it's supposed to, because that's got to be really difficult to go through.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard about it, I was actually surprised he played.
Yeah, yeah. I think it shows something about David Njoku. It really does. The fact that he wanted to play so much that he did, it couldn't have been comfortable. You know, he's got burns on his arm and his face. You know, he's wrapped up. I think he really showed something to his teammates.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned it earlier, but will Garrett be okay?
Yeah, he said he'd be ready. Stefanski said he'd be ready. You know, he was in a boot that seemed more precautionary. He finished the game. It was weird. You know, I went back and watched the game, and you see, it's like he kind of gets caught under his own weight. Like, his foot kind of gets caught under him as he bends. He's an amazing athlete. So just the fact that you can come back even in the same game from that is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. Why didn't we change our pick? I mean,
that's a big question, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we should have. I don't know. We had the opportunity, but we stayed with the Browns. So I dropped to 3-1, and you go to 2-2.
Yeah, I know. I thought the DTR would be better. But it was a bad idea. I should have changed the pick.
Yeah, we should have. Last thing I have for you, I just want to end it with, I wanted to go back to Andrew Berry's, chat with the media.
Yeah.
He had a pretty long beginning, right? Like, a message to the fans. So if fans didn't catch that, you want to sum it up?
Yeah, and I have one more thing. I'm glad you brought that up. It was just interesting. He doesn't usually do a big preamble, but he felt like it was necessary. And he talked about the culture of the program. He talked about what was good, what was bad from the first half. Then he was asked why. He said, hey, we want everybody to kind of be self-reflective and think about what weaknesses they need to work on. He goes, I think my public speaking is a weakness. He goes, I don't enjoy it a lot. I don't love talking to you guys up here in this setting, but I need to get better at it. It's part of this job. So therefore, he went with a kind of traditional opening statement that he doesn't normally do. So, you know, that's Andrew Berry trying to grow in his job, trying to be more presidential or whatever, however you want to phrase it. But that's why he did it. Yeah. So, and then last thing, you know, I mentioned it earlier, right? There's talk out there, Jonathan Taylor, right? Should the Browns go get him, right? Should the Browns go get him? Do they need him to replace Nick Chubb? The run game hasn't been good the last 2 weeks. I understand the discussion. I think it's not feasible. I think the Colts want more than the Browns would want to give up. You'd have to figure out a way to pay Jonathan Taylor. I don't think he's coming here. I don't think he'd agree to a trade and then just play out his contract. I think he'd want a new contract. And the Browns aren't going to give big money to another running back. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen. I'm not saying it's impossible to have the cap space. I just don't think that's their philosophy. And Barry said, hey, we like our running back room. And I thought it was a really interesting point. He said, I think we are trending and the league is trending to platoons at that position where it's not, hey, this guy's number one. And Chubb was always number one. But now you have Jerome Ford, who's a young guy, fifth-round pick. You got Kareem Hunt, they're going to ramp up, right, because he hadn't played in the preseason, had missed training camp. So I think we're going to see more of Kareem Hunt as the season goes along. And I think it's going to be a combination and not a, you know, number one, number two. And that's what happens when you don't have the best running back in the league like you had in Nick Chubb. But for Barry to phrase it like he did, we're trending and the league is trending in that direction, I think is significant. And, you know, they're going to have to figure out the Chubb contract situation because he's supposed to get $16 million next year. There's no way he's getting $16 million. You know, period, let alone coming back from this devastating injury. He's not going to be able to play at the earliest until some point next season because everything, you know, the ACL, the MCL, all that stuff and that knee that's getting repaired. So they're going to have to redo that contract. Hopefully he comes back. Hopefully he plays. But, you know, I think it's reasonable to expect him not to be the same Nick Chubb. And I think this is a significant philosophical shift that this organization, this front office probably always felt this way about running backs, but inherited Nick Chubb and therefore had to shift how they approach roster building, the offense, running back, all that, because you have arguably the best running back in the league. And I just don't think we'll ever see the Browns under this leadership invest as heavily in that position as they did with Chubb. And I think that's because they have a high-paid quarterback, because the league changes, because you think you can get – capable running backs for cheaper. So I think that was a significant kind of window that Andrew Berry opened.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. Up for sure. Well, that's it for me. I got to imagine you're going to enjoy your bye week. And if the weather allows you, you'll get on the green somewhere.
Yeah, I played twice already this week, Chud, and I'm hoping to get – I thought about playing today, but it looks like it's not going to happen. But Sunday is going to be cold, but I do have a tee time set up. I think I'm going to tough it out and play Sunday. So yeah. And then watch some football, obviously. So,
oh yeah. How about there's some good games, man. How about Sunday night football on NBC? Cheap plug.
Is it Niners Cowboys, right?
Niners Cowboys. And then you got Chiefs Vikings. I know the Vikings record isn't good, but you know, with Cousins and that explosive offense, that should be a fun one. And then you got another overseas game, Buffalo and Jacksonville. And yeah. I like those 9:30. I know some people don't like them. I like them personally because it just with my schedule and everything, I like getting up early on Sunday and having that one game. I'm a fan of it.
Yeah, I think it's good too. And I'm usually in the press box, so you try to catch it. Last week was so crazy with the Watson stuff. I didn't get to see any of that. That early game last week, but I like it too. You know, I mean, it lengthens your football day. There's something to watch when you wake up. But mm-hmm. You're right that, you know, I watch the Niners. I like to watch a couple of the Browns opponents. I like to go back and watch a couple of their games. Well, I watched the opener against the Steelers when I was scouting the Steelers. So then I'll watch this on Sunday night. It'll feel like I really have a good handle, I think, on the Niners, right? Not that we don't already know that they're really good. They got a bunch of playmakers. They got a really good defense. And probably the best play caller in the game. But it'll be interesting to see him watch, you know, on Sunday night. And, you know, I think if you're a Browns fan, you want them to win because then you hope there's a letdown. If they lose, then you know they're going to come back ready to play, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's a great point. And actually, you know what this is, Scott? This game Sunday night is the battle of the teams that we predicted to go to the Super Bowl. I have the Niners in the bowl, and you have the Cowboys.
That's a great point. That's a good call, Chud. That's a good pull right there. Yeah.
Reset. Let's see. You have Cowboys Bills, and I have Niners Chiefs. So I'll tell you
both those picks are pretty good, don't they?
they're both looking really good right now. Yeah. I think, you know, if we just real quick before we go here, I think the surprise is, you know, did not think the Bengals would be like this. And I think that has mostly everything to do with Burrow not being 100%, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously the biggest factor. I do think there's other things at play there just from reading some stuff out of Cincinnati. You know, if defenses caught up to the offense, which is easier to say when Burrow's not himself, right? But it feels like there's some underlying things there. T. Higgins has really struggled, which, you know, he's one of the best receivers in the league. He had one big game. He had no catches against the Browns week one. I watched him play whoever they play, or the Rams, I think that Monday night game. And he dropped a bunch of passes. Like, he hasn't been himself. They haven't been able to figure out how to unlock Ja'Marr Chase. And like you said, that's probably all connected to Joe Burrow. But it's interesting because I think people in Cincinnati think it might be a little even deeper than just Joe Burrow.
Hey, remember last week you talked about the odds, and if the Browns were to beat the Ravens, the North would go through the Browns, right? That you would expect them to be. Did you happen to look at the odds? I did not. But right now the North goes through Baltimore.
Well, I haven't seen the betting odds. I saw, I think it was an ESPN, you know, how they do the percentages. And it had, I think it had the Ravens at like maybe 89% to win the division.
Wow.
It was high. Maybe it wasn't quite 89, but the Browns were at 11. Maybe it was 80 and the Browns were at 11, and then they filled it in with Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. But I think if the Browns had won, it would have been not flipped, but I think the Browns would have been the favorite. So, yeah, that win, and the Ravens are now 2-0 in the division on the road, got a chance in Pittsburgh this week to go 3-0 in the division on the road. I think that's why it's so slanted now toward the Ravens.
Yeah, that's my biggest issue with the Browns right now, is that they're 1-2 in the division. I really – that has to – you know, at the end of the year, you know, you can't be 1-5 or 2-4. I think, you know, you got to be at least 500 or one above, don't you think?
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. They got – I mean, they got to be Pittsburgh when they get here, and then they got to split on the road either Cincinnati or Baltimore, right? I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah.
All right. Not time for me to take a nap so I can head into the weekend.
Hey, I appreciate you doing this as always, Chud. We'll hook up next week and we'll do a update on Watson, and then we'll make our picks for that Niners game, okay?
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
All right. Thank you, Chud. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.